Coming up, we get a loaded episode. We're talking NBA with Pee Wee to plug from Numbers on the Board, Pierre Andreessen. And then later on the show, we're talking NBA draft with another edition of Draft Class with James Barlow. That's all coming up right now. All right, let's talk some NBA to recap the weekend. Joining me, Pierre Andreessen from Teed Up, Pee Wee to plug, Numbers on the Board. How you doing, Pierre?
I'm good, Kevin. I'm actually kind of honored and excited to be here. I've been a fan of your content for some years now. We met, I don't even know if you remember, years ago at our first ever All-Star in Charlotte at the, what's the company that makes the clothes?
Well, remember they had like a little room with like the jean jackets or whatever. That's where we met, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think it was Express. And I remember that you were one of the first people to interact with us and we were so excited or whatever. So to be here, I'm actually kind of happy, nervous, excited, so many different emotions, but I've been a fan of your work for a long time now. And I'm glad to see the jump to Yahoo and everything.
Thank you, man. I'm happy to see all the success that you guys have had as well. You're doing stuff for NBC Sports now, you know, with your show. And I think like it's very cool to see the growth with Numbers on the Board and all of you guys together with everything you've done and your show with Teed Up as well. So I'm excited to have you on, Pierre. And we're going to start off with some pretty big news that dropped on Monday morning from Tim McMahon over at ESPN. He said on their podcast that trust has completely disintegrated between Nico Harrison, the Mavericks general manager, and Patrick Dumont, the team owner. And he said, quote, "It's a matter of when, not if, Nico Harrison will be fired." This feels like inevitable, really. I mean, it's kind of like, no da. How could trust not have disintegrated? But what's your instant reaction to this news that just dropped this morning, Pierre?
You know, I typically try to be as positive as I can because this is a human element to the sport and the business. And you never want somebody to fail, not succeed, or get fired from a job. You know, being fired, I think, in this business is used so loosely that we forget that somebody is actually losing their job. But yeah, I mean, Nico Harrison has not lived up to the Luka Doncic move and the whole defense wins championships. And even the thought process of coming from that to lucking up and getting Cooper Flagg and trying to transition into like getting this number one overall pick that could save the day. And as a basketball fan, not even just being an analyst and working in the media, but as a pure fan, it has been hard to enjoy the Cooper Flagg experience. This is a guy that people deemed as generational and was supposed to be box office. And on a night in, night basis, it's very hard for me to prioritize the Dallas Mavericks in any form or fashion. And so because of all of that, I could see the trust being lost. I could see the frustrations, but I'm like the everyday typical fan as well, where I'm looking at the situation and saying, are you surprised? You know, is this a no-duh situation like you just said? And like, why did it take all of this to get here? And did we not ever question? And when I say we, I mean the Mavericks ownership. Did they not ever question anything after the Luka trade? Why did it have to happen this late? Because a lot of Maverick fans that I know have been screaming this since, you know, the very first game of the year, it seemed like. So, yeah, overdue situation, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's unfortunate at this point. I mean, the team was in the finals not that long ago. And I mean, for it to be at this point where, you know, it's good news for Dallas Mavericks fans. You know, it's just the reality of it. Like, I think for them, it's going to be very hard, as I talked about on the podcast on Thursday. We had Slightly Biased on and with Tom Haverstraw and talked about, you know, how for Mavs fans, it's going to be hard just to move on until I think like everything that came from Luka, that was around Luka, is gone at this point. And as Mark Stein said over the weekend as well, there's like a vibe shift potential for Dallas. And I personally think they got to blow things up. I think you got to trade AD. I think trade Kyrie once he's healthy. And just in my opinion, and play with a young team, get another high pick in this loaded draft class that I'll talk about with James Barlow later in the podcast, and move forward with a young team. And hopefully Cooper turns into something. And also, like you said, it's been really hard to enjoy Cooper this year. And it shouldn't be hard to enjoy a rookie who is as dynamic as he is, but he's being put in a tough situation, playing point guard. It's just an ugly mess overall. And I think it is inevitable at some point they'll move on, but that does not mean it'll solve everything, because with Dumont and that family, they are not basketball people. There's no guarantee that the person that replaces Nico Harrison will be any better. Because I think with Nico, all that you can say about the Luka trade, he made some other pretty good moves prior to that. I mean, the PJ Washington acquisition, drafting Derek Lively, he made some good moves. And so, like, I think you have to acknowledge those while also looking at the really fatal error that he did make in trading away Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis. It's just, I just feel bad for Dallas Mavericks fans. And I hope at this point, I hope at some point, they're able to feel some joy again, but and feel good about basketball, you know?
If you were a Dallas Maverick fan, or if you were close to a Dallas Maverick fan, could you, in some world, sell yourself on the idea that you mentioned where you kind of transition? You have Cooper Flagg. Like, we know he's good. We don't need the numbers. Obviously, you wouldn't like to see the struggles, but we understand as basketball people, the construction is part of the problem there. But you look at this upcoming draft, and there is Boozer, Peterson, DeBonsa. You have your draft pick for this year. Could you sell yourself on the potential of pairing Cooper Flagg with one of those other guys? And now, again, it's still going to be tough to get over Luka. You're probably never going to get over that. Like, that's something that I think Maverick fans at some point will have to accept, is like, don't look for closure on that or like try to get over. That's going to sting forever. But if you look further down the tunnel enough, you might see a little bit of light. And I can't get past the idea of pairing Cooper Flagg with one of those other guys that's coming into this draft, you know, and like that idea is kind of intriguing. Like Darren Peterson, Cooper Flagg leading the next Dallas Mavericks force. I could kind of get behind that.
No kidding. Exactly. And I think that's the thing. Like, you're a Knicks fan, right?
Yes.
And so, like, I think, like, you know this, like, there's always new players that come, right? Like, I think, like, you're always going to cherish certain eras of basketball where you have your favorite players, but then new players come and they become your new favorite players. And I think for the Mavericks fans, you're never going to get over Luka if you were a fan of the Mavericks at the time he was on the team. But there's going to be more new players that come that you become fans of again. And there's going to be a new generation of kids who don't even remember Luka on the Mavericks. And like, those are the fans you need to win over again. And I think for Dallas, having a clean slate would allow them to do that. If they do get lucky in the lottery again and get one of the top four picks, particularly one of the top two picks for Darren Peterson or AJ DiBonza, it's going to feel a lot better to move forward at this point. And, you know, Dallas is 3-7. So far, they don't need to trade away anybody to have good draft lottery odds. But at some point, those guys are going to come back and they're going to be playing games. And I hope for Dallas. To me, I'm rooting for them. Losing is winning this year, in my opinion, for the Dallas Mavericks. And so getting a high lottery pick is of the utmost importance, as we see with some of the other teams in Texas, including the San Antonio Spurs. Of course, they drafted Dylan Harper back in June. He's not playing right now. They traded for De'Aaron Fox. He made his debut on Saturday, and he looked great. De'Aaron Fox looked like he missed no time at all. He had 24 points in the game. He's playing on ball. He was playing off ball. The funny thing is that Stephon Castle, you know, continued to really be the lead point guard, the facilitator in that first game. And with De'Aaron Fox, I was impressed, man. I thought him and Wemby and the whole unit together looked like a team that had a lot more experience together than you would have anticipated for a first game. What were your first impressions of Fox's debut?
He came in and I think he helped some of those things that were flaws for them early on. So, you know, it's still early in the season, but they struggled with paint touches. Obviously, Stephon Castle turned the ball over a lot on his first early portion of the season. And then you talk about pull-up jump shooting, playing out of the pick and roll, just having that on-ball threat. And like you said, he looked very sharp. They looked like they had been playing together for more than what they have been. And I'm buying on this team. They already looked good for the early portion without him, and they were extremely scary. And Vic was playing at an MVP level, still is, defensive player of the year level. And now you add in a guy who allows you to calm things down, could create his own shot. We saw this game was a little bit closer than they wanted it to be, but I think it was still good to get early clutch minutes and clutch time from De'Aaron Fox. And he was a guy that you can lean on because previous to that, as much as I like Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell, as good as Dylan Harper had been early on, you still miss that dynamic on-ball creator. And to be able to see him give them that in the first game, it made me look at them a lot more scarier. They had already been a scary team in my eyes. And only thing that I can continue to think about is how hard it's going to be to game plan for this team in a 7-game series. You already have to deal with Vic. I think some of the others are complimenting him and playing real strong early on. Devin Vassell has been miraculous. And then you add in De'Aaron Fox, and now it's just this team can give you a lot of different fits. And if I was a team in the Western Conference, I would be fearful and be scared of this team and what they could be come playoff time.
I mean, I think that's spot on, Pierre. Ultimately, with Fox, we saw the shot he had with 30 seconds left, kind of, you know, stopped the free throw line, leaning layup floater to extend San Antonio's lead over New Orleans. It's a close game, as you said, but I thought the paint touches, the speed, it's a different variety. I mean, Harper is kind of like he plays at his own pace. It's strong, his ability to get to the rim. Castle's more of a connector. Fox brings speed. And I think, you know, I still have my questions about the amount of shooting on the team overall, especially among those guards. But, you know, Harper shot well before he got hurt. I think 35-36% from three. Castle, we'll see. Fox is a solid shooter. Still have questions there, but ultimately I think Castle's development overall as well, in that game particularly, had 14 assists, and he looks like a guy. It's not just high pick and roll over and over with him either. He's a connector. Like, so many of the assist opportunities he had were like, you know, it's hot potatoes, the ball, you know, quick pass right back to him, finds the man immediately, you know, little elbow pick and roll with Jeremy Sochan, quick lob. He made quick decisions on the floor. And with Castle, to your point about game planning, with Castle, Harper, and Fox, Oklahoma City last year, Indiana last year, these teams that have so many sources of creation, it can come from anywhere. That's, I think, what San Antonio is angling for with these guards. Will it be enough shooting? We'll see in time. But the amount of creators they have on the team is definitely part of the plan moving forward for them.
I think that was one of the most intriguing things about Stephon Castle coming into the NBA, was like, there were so many questions. Is he a point guard? Is he a, you know, small forward? Will the outside shot connect? He's always been, for me, since I've seen him in high school all the way to UConn, and even now at the Spurs, when you mention his development, he's a winning player that has showed that he can adapt in any situation. He reminds me so much of, like, if Drew Holiday and Jimmy Butler, like, had a baby. You know, like, he is just like a blend of those two guys. He's super strong. He can play make, as you said, in a lot of different instances. He isn't the greatest shooter, but throughout the first course of this season, whenever I've watched Spurs game, he is, for whatever reason, always making the big-time three-point shot. Can play out of the dunker in short spurts. Like, the guy just does a lot of different things. And that versatility, I think, is something that I appreciate. And I think every winning team needs it. You mentioned Caruso. I think when you talk about Drew Holiday with the Celtics, you're a Celtics fan. You know Drew Holiday. Josh Hart for my Knicks. You need those guys that can come in and just give you any source of production, and I think Stephon Castle fits that. And I'm super glad that the Spurs have continued to empower putting the ball in his hands and kind of letting him play through those early mistakes, because I think the more reps he gets and the more comfortable and confident he is on ball, the higher their ceiling is, especially with De'Aaron Fox coming to the mix. Like you said, it just gives you so many different, you know, variations of scoring and playing.
Do you consider the Spurs a championship contender?
Coming into the season, I would have said no, but at this point, I actually am going to say yeah, and I might regret it, because they are a little young. They haven't had, you know, playoff experience together, but Victor Wembanyama is just so different, and I think he just provides an entirely different element of defense. And again, when you talk about game planning, they're just going to throw you a lot of fits, and they're still in a position to be buyers. So we talk about the shooting. They wouldn't surprise me as a team at the deadline to make a move that could address some of those issues because of the assets and the depth that they have. So yeah, I think I actually would. I really would. Now, that's not to say that Denver and OKC, you know, won't be extreme factors either. But it's hard to not think of the Spurs, you know, going on some type of run and having a shot in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think there's tiers. Oklahoma City is on probably a level of their own. Maybe yes. Denver's there as well, considering what Jokic is and what the talent is on Denver's roster as well. But you can talk yourself into the Spurs. I mean, like if there's a turned ankle in the playoffs for SGA or, you know, just a really rough series, shooting series for a team, whatever it is, I mean, you can talk yourself into the Spurs. That's the tier that they would belong in. And that's not just about Victor with what he's capable of doing, but I think it's to your point, what, you know, Devin Vassell's doing, what Keldon Johnson's doing. It's what these role players are turning into for the team. And that's where the picture is starting to come together for the Spurs. And on top of that, as you said, they have a lot of assets. They didn't have to give up a lot to get Fox. They have a lot of different pieces they could put in trades. And we also still haven't seen this team fully healthy. We haven't seen them with Fox and Cornette and Harper as well. And so we haven't seen this team at full strength yet either to really know what's missing. I think it's pretty clear they need shooting, but it's a matter of how you actually take that step. But ultimately, I do think this is a team that would make a move, but I don't think they'd... Is there a guy that like stands out that like, would you trade for Lauri Markkanen? Like, would you want to put all those salaries together to go get him? Or who's in mind for you to target if you're the Spurs, whether player type or a specific type of player that could become available?
You're right about the contracts and the money. Like, I'm always scared of that, especially when you're a team that like you said
it can hurt chemistry. Coming together. Right? You know, like that's the thing. Like, that's what OKC kind of avoided during the season, a midseason trade,
which was so smart for them. I think we don't applaud them enough for that because they had so many chances to kind of go for it in a sense.
I look at a guy like a lot cleaner during the offseason to trade Giddy for Caruso and go get Hartenstein compared to midseason doing that.
I'm always a fan of that route, personally. That's why I like what the Knicks did when they got Mikal and Kat. It was before the season and whatnot. I mean, Kat was practically at the start of the season, but Trey Murphy III from New Orleans.
That's first name on my mind, too. First name on my mind. Go all in.
What is his price? You know,
pricey.
I think
very pricey.
Yeah, but also the Pelicans might get a little desperate because their season has, like, we've all talked about the trade that they did during the draft and giving up that first round pick unprotected to be in this situation. You know, they might have to kind of make a move, and I don't really know what Zion's value is. I do know Trey Murphy would probably be maybe the highest value player on the roster right now. And I just think he would fit so great with the Spurs. And I think he would be worth it. I think he would be plug and play where you wouldn't have to worry about chemistry too much. I think he would give you a certain level of effort defensively that would come in and match. His ability to play without the basketball, I think, would complement, you know, Vic on the double teams, Fox, Castle, Harper, all of this creation around him. He would strive. He's one of those guys that I think we would look at him at a higher level and as a better player in that system around those players rather than what's going on in New Orleans. So Trey Murphy III or somebody in that mold.
I think Trey Murphy is a perfect example, and in part for San Antonio, it'd just be a very easy trade to make. Like, you could give up Harrison Barnes for Trey Murphy one for one to match salaries, and then you just stack on assets, whether picks or youth on top of that to meet whatever threshold it is that the Pelicans front office would desire for Trey Murphy. And by the way, I mean, if I'm the Pelicans, I prefer to keep Trey Murphy, but at the same time, like, there's a line for, he's not an untouchable. There's a line for a lot of players. And I think that thing you hit on, I mean, it's early. It's only November 10th as we record right now, but, you know, the Spurs are one of those teams that if you're factoring in who could win a championship, their ability to make trades needs to be part of that consideration. And, you know, we'll see how this develops. I look forward to seeing more Fox, Wemby. I mean, those guys didn't run a lot of pick and roll together. I want to see some more of that in the weeks and months ahead. We started with two Texas teams here talking about the Mavericks. Bad news for them. Good news for the Spurs. Good news for the Rockets as well. The third team in Texas, the Houston Rockets, had a 22-7 fourth quarter run to come back against the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday. That was a great game. Şengün, he had a possession near the end of that game. Did you see that where Giannis picked up Şengün full court and Şengün went by him? It was a very odd. We get the play on screen here. Kind of circles the wagons and then blows by him. And it's a spin move into the paint and scored. It was a funny play, but Şengün, I mean, it capped off what was another great game for him.
Man, this team, both teams, because it was a great win for the Rockets. Tough loss for the Bucks, who have been, you know, playing good, but, you know, not as consistent as I think Giannis would want. He talked about great teams don't lose two in a row and different things like that. I do love this little thing that they have, him and Şengün. You know, from the Euro League situation or Euro Basket, I'm sorry. Giannis had scored earlier in this game on Şengün and one and was saying, wake me up, wake me up, wake me up. So they have something going on. But very big win for the Rockets. One thing that I'm loving watching the last few Rockets games, you can see in real time, and I love this as a basketball fan, the confidence growing for Reed Shepherd. Like to watch confidence kind of, you know, build up for a young player in real time, I think is always a joy to see. And I've been seeing that with him like every single game. He's a guy that went from that first game, everybody was yelling at the TV to give Kevin Durant the ball and, you know, to not be so nervous or whatever in the game against OKC. To now, Reed Shepherd, I see, is pulling up in transition on fast breaks for threes. To go from that level of confidence to this level, and what, 10 games, I think is kind of insane. And I think it kind of positions the Rockets in my mind to be a team that I can't really rule out. I was high on them coming into the season. The Fred injury kind of made me take a step back. But if I'm seeing Reed Shepherd constantly grow in confidence, you know, over the course of 10 games, I can't imagine what the next 15 games or 20 games will look like for him. They may be a team that I have to start putting back into, you know, consideration when we talk about having a chance out west.
I'll tell you what, Reed Shepherd is going to have one of those games where he drops 30. It's going to happen. It's inevitable that Reed Shepherd is going to have a game where he drops 30 or 35 and people are like, whoa. Because like so far he's had games where it's, you know, 16 points on 10 shots and 12 points on 4 or 5 from three, like these good, efficient, lower volume games. But he's going to have a night where he just goes scorching hot and he plays 35 minutes and he has a big performance. And that's what I think is really going to get people's attention with what he's done ever since. And by the way, OKC makes everybody look bad with their defense.
They do. Good point.
never mind a guy like Reed who, you know, he doesn't get to the rim a lot. You know, he does have his flaws as a player. And I thought in that Bucks game as well, I mean, it was, he hasn't had a lot of games where it was like one of his like Kentucky style box scores. He had 4 steals in the game, deflecting passes, creating transition opportunities. He's a defensive playmaker, even if he has his issues on ball. And I think you're touching on something that is very important with Houston this year, and that's how they're distributing touches. You know, now that they've lost Fred VanVleet due to injury, they trade away Jalen Green. And, you know, just those two guys alone last season accounted for 139 touches per game. They're replacing those touches with more Şengün, who's getting 21 more touches per game, more Amen Thompson, who's also getting 21 touches more per game from 54 to 75. Reed Shepherd has doubled his touches pretty much, 22 touches to 43. Jabari Smith getting a little bit more, 37 to 45. And of course, you bring in Kevin Durant, who's getting 62 touches per game, pretty much the equivalent of Jalen Green last year at 63. But like Şengün, Amen Thompson, Reed Shepherd, and KD in particular, those guys are very, very overwhelmingly filling what you felt like you lost from Fred VanVleet. And ultimately, like VanVleet's a solid player, but point Şengün, Amen Thompson, this Swiss Army knife, and Reed Shepherd, the shooter. These guys collectively, I think, are adding new ingredients to the Rockets that make them feel like a far more dynamic offense in the half court. And that makes me higher on them than what I maybe thought they could have been with Fred VanVleet. No disrespect to him at all.
Absolutely.
But this team just feels a lot more diverse in their ways that they can beat you right now, in part because of Van Vliet's absence.
Yeah, that, you know, and we still haven't even seen, not that he would be on this touches chart, but I think Dorian Finney-Smith gives them some type of outside shooting.
Haven't even threat. Seen him yet. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
You almost forget about
you
him.
You almost forget that. Yeah, you forget. That is like the one thing with Houston, why they confuse me, is because I love the offense. I love what they do. I think the right word you used was dynamic. That's exactly what they bring, because it's so many different ingredients, as you said. But there are games when I watch, and I do wish they had a little bit more outside presence. And I think Fred would have given them that. I think that's why the confidence in Reed Shepherd is very important. But yeah, they confuse me, because I'll look and I'll be like, man, I wish there was more 3-point volume. But then I think against the Grizzlies, Amen Thompson had like 26 shot attempts and he only took like 3 threes, and he had a really great game. And, you know, if that's their recipe and that's leading them to the success, then they just need to drive home on that. Even with, you know, they started out with the double big lineups and just trying to attack the glass and control the offensive rebound in there with Adams and Sengun. I prefer Sengun at the five with Jabari, KD, kind of outlining your front court there. But yeah, I don't know if I was sure that they would be like this early in the process of adding Kevin Durant and losing Fred VanVleet. But I've enjoyed it. I think that they're a team that is like, they're intriguing, because it's like, on one end, are they a contender to you? I mean, we know they can be, but it's like, you know, some days I look at them and I'm like, yeah, this is really it. But then the other days it's like, maybe it's a year too early. So I'm not sure. They just intrigue me that much on a game by game basis. I'm definitely a fan and I want them to be contenders. I think them being added to the fire would be super dope. And I love the way that they play and compete defensively. I love what Amen Thompson does. I think Sengun is really fun. We saw that opening night game against the Thunder, where they took it down to the wire. I think that gave me playoff vibes in the first game of the year. And so I would love to be able to see that in the real playoffs. But yeah, they've surprised me. And I know that they're a team that we all projected highly, but I'm still surprised at how fast they were able to get things going. And yeah, they've been impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you lose Van Vliet late. It would have been completely understandable if this team stumbled out of the gates and instead of 6-3, if they were 3-6. I think people mm-hmm. would forgive it, you know, if that had been the case, considering, you know, I guess they've also had an easier schedule. You know, they faced Detroit, Brooklyn, Toronto, Boston, Dallas. It's been a lighter schedule, so maybe it wouldn't have been forgiven. But I think you're talking about the process. Right? Like the mm-hmm. process of watching them play, they look like they haven't missed a beat. And that's where it's like very impressive how well they've performed so far. And I think with Houston, are they a contender? I'd say yes, they belong in that category where you can definitely talk your way into them as a contender. If you're projecting development over the course of the year, what is Reed Shepherd and Amen Thompson and Jabari Smith in April compared to where they are today? Young guys can get better over the course of the season. And, you know, KD, I mean, with him at this point so far in the year, we saw him drop 31 in that game against the Bucks on Sunday. That was a season high for him. He had 37 against Detroit. I'm sorry. He had 37 against Detroit, but he's on a little bit of a lower usage so far. I'm sure that's in part mm-hmm. because he's 37 years old at this point. But with KD, we know he's capable of doing more in those big games come April and maybe May. And so I think this team has another level that they can tap into. And just overall, it's just like, dude, they lose last year where their best offense is rebounding their own misses. You know, that was their best offense. It's just the reality of it. That was their best offense with Sengun and Adams just throwing their bodies at the rim, trying to grab offensive rewards.
Which is crazy.
It's nuts. And they still had a great series and could have won the series. This year, you have Kevin Durant, year two Reed Shepherd, year three Amen Thompson. I just think this team has a lot more layers, and we're seeing the early signs of that and why like there's silver linings on losing Van Vliet. And we'll be right back after this break. Jalen Green. He played in his first game for the Phoenix Suns on Friday. He had a great performance. And then the next day, he re-aggravated his hamstring injury, which is a major bummer for the Suns and a bummer for him because he looked great in that backcourt next to Devin Booker in his debut with Phoenix because, you know, Phoenix, they've been a bit fun this year, man. 5-5.
Yes, they have
been. I mean, they're playing at a fast pace. They were 26th in possession time last year, according to Unpredictable. This year, they're up to 8th in possession time, a dramatic change for them with a new head coach. So I've liked watching the Suns, but I feel like I would like them more if Jalen Green were able to stay on the floor with what the type of energy that he brings out there.
Yeah, I think they have been surprising, to say the least. I kind of thought that they would be right outside of the play-in, but I definitely thought the start would be a little rough considering that they weren't going to have Jalen Green. And then I saw Dylan Brooks go down and miss a few games. You are right. They have been exciting. They play extremely late, though. I can't lie. Like, it's almost bedtime when they come on for me. I am trying
they're a morning watch. Watch the game in the morning for me. I'm not staying up. But I've been going to bed at 10 p.m. lately. I'm an old man,
too.
It feels great. You can go to bed at 10, too?
Yes, like 10, between 10 and 11. And I'm usually a 1 in the morning type guy.
Yes.
So, the new schedule is just beating me up, and then the daylight savings and everything. But yeah, I find myself turning their game on and kind of trying to prepare for bed. But some of these games have kept me up, and Devin Booker is a big reason for that. I love getting Devin Booker back into that.
Awesome.
And like the last few years, obviously with KD, Bradley Beal was a little different. And I understand it, right? Kevin Durant joining your team, you don't want to be the guy that is not allowing Kevin Durant to be himself or to be comfortable. But I do think that, you know, Devin Booker being in this role is what we want to see from Devin Booker. And I think what we're seeing in the first 10 games, this is why I was so big on Devin Booker staying with the Suns. To me, there's so much value. And number one, being a part of an organization that is championing you, it's your town, your city, your team. He's already a leading scorer. But when you look around the NBA, it's not this thing anymore where we're just throwing a bunch of talent on one team and we're just going to shoot up the standings. There is proper team building. And I think if you look close enough, there are some things that Phoenix has done quickly that gives you a little bit of confidence and feel some type of security that in the next 2 years, they could be right back in the mix, not necessarily as a contender, but as a playoff team that is building for contention. And the NBA moves so fast. If you put a piece here and a piece there, stars align, and then you have a trade for a top tier role player or complimentary piece, and you will be back in the mix that fast. But I love some of their draft picks over the last few years. Ryan Dunn out the gate has looked really good. I love that they're shooting the three ball as much as they are. Grayson Allen, Devin Booker, all of these guys getting up shots. And then Dylan Brooks brings a certain level of intensity to every franchise he's been in. And I don't want to call it culture because I think we overuse that word in basketball, but like there's a certain swagger and toughness that he brings. And I think you've seen some of that imprint already in these first 10 games, but they have surprised me out the first 10 games. And I hope that they can continue this. I don't want it to be like a first 10 game fluke and then they lose 7 or 8 in a row. And it's like, oh, that's the Phoenix team that we thought was going to be here this year.
I mean, I think it was pretty impressive for them to win those the home and home against the Clippers. Did a great job defensively against James Harden, point of attack defense.
Felt like they played the Clippers 30 times.
I know. It's 3 times already this season. I mean, the scheduler is 3 games out of 10. What? It's kind of an odd little quirk in the schedule so far. There's been some weird quirks. Like, what is it right now? I think both the Warriors and Bucks have like 7 games in 10 days or some strange.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a crazy amount. And I get the days wrong. It might be 7 and 12 or whatever, but it's a lot of games packed in not a lot of time. And yeah, that's a funny one with the Suns with 3 games against the Clippers so far. But to your point, Booker has been very, very consistent in saying he wants to play for the Suns for life, that he wants to spend his whole career there. Been very consistent with that, despite all the outside noise. What I'm intrigued by, the front office standpoint of things, I'm sure they would like to keep Booker as well, but is there a line? Is there like a team like Detroit, home state team for Devin Booker that at the deadline they're like, we're one move away. We'll give you Tobias Harris and we'll give you Jaden Ivey and salary fill and all of our future picks. You get our whole future. Four future firsts, you get the swaps, you get everything. Like, is there a line where the Suns are like, whoa, we gotta listen? Booker's 29 years old. You're, like you said, in a couple years, a team ready to build for contention. Yes, I can see that as well with their youth and the foundation. They're playing fast. They're playing with great defense. Jordan Ott looks like a good head coach. Booker's a great player. He's your star, and a star is the hardest thing to find. But then at that point, Booker's 31 years old or 32 years old. And then if you're still 2 years away, well, then he's 33, 34, 35.
Yep.
And so if you're the Suns front office, that's where I wonder, is there a line this season where some team is willing to cross it that actually makes you take a meeting about the future of Devin Booker? That's what I'm wondering about with the Phoenix Suns. Because I agree with everything you said, and I would love Devin Booker to be a Sun for life, but I wonder if the front office gets a phone call this year that makes them say, well, we got to think about it and at least present this opportunity to Book.
What phone call, if you ran the Suns, would make you do that? Whereas, like, not only am I thinking about it, I want to do this. Like, if that Pistons situation that you put together, Tobias, Ivy, and all of those, is all that enough?
Yeah.
Or
It made me think about it because it's like with the Pistons, like, okay, are those all those picks going to be in the 20s every year? The Pistons are 8-2 this year. Cade Cunningham looks like he's taking another leap ever after his slow start. He had a fourth quarter come back on Sunday. Cade's been awesome.
Crazy.
Is this team really going to, over the next 7 years, going to be in the lottery ever? I don't know. I would not want to bet against Cade Cunningham and Devin Booker and the way in Ausar Thompson and
yes.
the way that and Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart and how that core is coming together. I wouldn't want to bet against them. So I think I'd take a meeting, but I don't think I'd take the deal. I think I'd want some real high quality picks. You know, I think that deal is good enough where I'd say, hey, Devin, we don't want to take this deal. We don't think this deal is good enough for you, but we wanted to present this opportunity to you. I think it's at that line, but I'd want more than that for Devin Booker, who's just been absolutely awesome this year, man. I mean, like, for a guy who loses some star teammates to continue producing at this level, putting in the effort and setting the tone that he does on both ends of the floor, like, you got to respect the guy. Like, you could easily sulk and ask for a trade and want out, but instead he's buying in and embracing being part of this new Suns team. I just have the utmost respect for that guy, and I would not want to move him if I'm the Suns. It would have to be an over-the-top, ridiculous offer for me to want to move Devin Booker. But I do wonder if a team would be willing to cross it. That's just what I'm thinking about this year.
I agree. Like, the idea is going to be out there. It's been out there for a lot of people. They talked about it a lot in the summer. But yeah, I'm just one of those guys where it's like, I'd rather keep my guy and just swing and stay, like, I don't even want to say loyal, but like, stay in this with him. If he's willing to be committed, we just gave him the extension. He's big to our community and the city because, yeah, I trade him to Detroit. He's with Cade. They're taking over the NBA. And to your point, we have to hope and dream that in one of these years, something weird happens where their pick can convey into something special. And even then, that's the one-off that we're praying for, and we would have to hit that. And so if I'm trading my franchise guy that I've allowed to be arguably, or not even arguably to me, I'll say it, the best player in our franchise history, I got to get more back than just selling the idea of draft picks. Because we've seen a lot of these teams do these. I think somebody put up a graphic, Kevin, the other day where they showed what the Pistons gave up to get Jalen Duren to like the Hornets or something. And it was nothing. It sounded like a bunch in the real time. You got this and we'll give you two picks in a second round. And they showed the players it materialized in, and it wasn't anything that anybody is talking about currently. And so like, I wouldn't like want to trade Devin Booker for the hopes of what some players could be. I would kind of need Ausar Thompson back in the deal, something concrete. Mm-hmm. And I would need a hope or a shot in the dark with some draft picks, but just the picks. And I'm a guy that's turning into a less is more. That's always been my little thing. Less is more theory. I think Giannis is showing it with the Bucks. We'll see how far that goes. But I think the NBA is going into a era where it's like, have your best player and get as many surrounding complementary high value pieces. You know what I mean? Everybody won't be able to do it as good as OKC. But like, Giannis and the Bucks right now are intriguing to me. It's Giannis, who is a dog, a star, whatever you want to title him. And he has great complementary players that fit his game. AJ Green, Gary Trent, Miles Turner, you know, like Ryan Rollins.
Ryan Rollins.
So I'm kind of liking, yeah, I'm liking that idea of team building. And I could see, like we said, a little of that with Booker. It may not be as fast, but in another year or two, I could see Booker with a lot of great like surrounding players and that being something in Phoenix.
Ryan Rollins, by the way, still number one in the NBA in pick and roll scoring efficiency. Still number one.
Oh,
head of Stephen Curry.
Wow.
Head of Anthony Edwards and head of Mitchell and Luka and all these guys. Ryan Rollins, still number one so far this season.
As as a draft guy, quick question for you. How fun is it to see somebody like Ryan Rollins be the player that like you got to see some glimpses of in college? Because a lot of guys like Ryan Rollins, they come to the NBA and then they kind of conform and find a role or footing to stay in. And now it's like this guy is, people are surprised at some of the scoring outbursts, but that's what he did in college. You know, like that's what put him on everybody's radar. Was he was able to, yeah, Toledo, get buckets.
Yeah, Ryan Rollins, I mean, for him to be playing at the level he is right now, that's, it's a bit surprising for him to reach this point, but that's the thing. It's like he did it in the MAC conference, and it's like, well, mm-hmm. it's the MAC. But he's doing all the things now in the NBA that he did then. It's just sometimes, yeah, like crazy. A lot of the times it doesn't translate. Like these scorers, these bucket getters become role players, and for him to carve out the lane that he has so far is just pretty awesome. Pretty awesome to see it happening for him with the Milwaukee Bucks. And he's a key figure on the team. You know, opportunity knocks sometimes, you know. Kevin Porter goes out, Ryan Rollins goes in, and now he looks like the guy. And, you know, it's pretty cool to see that. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls, another team in the Eastern Conference. They've lost three of their last four games, the Knicks, the Bucks, and the Cavs. They blew a 19-point lead against the Cavaliers. Did you see the Josh Giddey play? DeAndre Hunter just snapping his ankles, almost literally.
Yeah, that was tough. I'm in Chicago. I'm obviously a Knicks fan, but I have love for the Bulls. I love the start that they had to the season. Watching this kind of made my heart drop for a second. He did come back to the game. So now I can laugh like you and just enjoy the play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Bulls, great start. I was never a buyer. I was just in the moment enjoying the brand of basketball they were playing with. You know, you had to figure that things were going to settle out, especially in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, they would figure to fall a little bit in the standings. I'm still intrigued, though, with, you know, so many teams not playing up to par. Is there still room for the Bulls to take advantage? Maybe not be a top four seed out East, but still be a playoff team. And I know a lot of Bull fans were kind of hoping to, you know, be in the lottery running and get one of those three guys we talked about earlier. But like with the way Orlando was playing, Trae Young's injury with the Hawks, those are two teams that I was high on as far as being legitimate playoff teams. It kind of opens up the door for a Bulls team to continue to be a surprise and maybe sneak into the playoffs. And Josh Giddey is an all-star guard up to this point. So the Bulls kind of slowing down a bit, but I'm still intrigued and still trying to figure out if this team can be a legitimate playoff team or was that just a hot start?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, it was a hot start, but at the same time, I do think this team is going to be better than people anticipated. And I mean, they haven't had Coby White yet. And Coby White, like, they have the 21st ranked half court offense so far, according to Synergy. I'd imagine White's going to help that, going to inject some scoring mm-hmm. and creation. And, you know, I feel optimistic about what they can be. Are they contenders? No, like, they're not contenders. But I think they're a fun team and they're going to be a competitive team and they're going to be better than anticipated. And, you know, some of those other teams you mentioned, you know, Trae Young out for Atlanta, Kristaps Porzingis, man, like, he had like a good first couple games of the season, but
he did.
I mean, the past week plus or so, he looked more like he did last year in Boston. And, you know, I was talking to somebody recently that has what he has, Potts. I don't know if that's going to go away, man. I don't know, man. Like that's a pretty serious thing with the way it affects your energy. Like I guess when you lay down and then when you stand up, your heart rate dramatically increases. Like it's a pretty serious thing. And I think with KP again, like this is not sourced, nothing at all, but like just the way he played in the first couple of games of the year compared to the last couple of games, it's like, damn, is this back again? And so with the Hawks, they have injuries. There's still questions about Kristaps Porzingis, and I have a little bit of a harder time feeling high on the Hawks in the way that I may have entering the season, considering some of these big questions. But I think the Bulls could be better than them. You know, Miami with their remade offense, like they look excellent as well. You know, the Bucks are better than a lot of people anticipated. I was very high on them, to be clear. But, you know, I think with Chicago, they'll be in that top six-ish, you know. I think that's fair to say with the Bulls, especially if Coby White can inject some juice into that half-court offense, which I hope he does. For the Philadelphia 76ers, they're another team kind of in that same category. They're 6-4
yes.
So far this season. And Bede's been better after his slow start, still playing, you know, inconsistent minutes every night. But on a per-minute basis, he looks dominant in his recent games. Paul George should be back soon, and he's going to have to replace somebody in the starting lineup. Could be Kelly Oubre, but he's been great so far this year. Well, also could be your guy, Trendon Watford, who I saw a post that quoted recently after his massive 20-point, 17-rebound, 10-assist game last weekend. And it was like, at Pee-wee to plug, back in the month of July 2021, you added the Knicks and said, Trendon Watford, please. What did you see in Trendon Watford at that time that is now manifesting for him on the court?
Yeah, Trendon Watford has always possessed this ability to just be an all-around basketball player. I saw it at LSU where he would be a guy that can grab it off the glass, push the break and transition, half-court offense. He can make plays out of the elbow, short roll. He could be the ball handler in a pick and roll. He could also be the screener in a pick and roll. And then he got into the NBA with the Blazers, did some stuff with the Nets, and specifically the Nets over the last year or so. I was like, yo, this dude is going to be a free agent. Like, somebody has to take a swing. Because I remember wanting the Knicks to get him. And when he went to Philly, I talked about it so much on the podcast and I'm on my YouTube channel and different things like that, that a lot of Philly fans remembered. So when his first couple of games, when he came back from injury, he played pretty well. And a lot of people were like, yo, you were right, you were right. And then he had the triple-double, which now puts everything on notice. I just think he's a guy that, number one, plays tough. I think he's a locker room guy. A lot of guys rally around Trendon Watford. He's a really popular guy amongst his peers. And then again, when you talk about Swiss Army knife at the four, he does a lot of that. And I feel like they needed that in Philly. Like, I was trying to figure out for the longest who would be their power forward. And so when I saw this signing, this was like a very underrated one of me. And I'm glad to see him playing so well to start. I don't know if you know, but I found this out over the summer. His brother is Christian Watford from Indiana, who hit that game-winning three over that Kentucky team those years ago.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, it was an Indiana-Kentucky game that was, like, crazy. This is when I believe Kentucky may have been undefeated, and this might be, like, was it the Anthony Davis team? It was one of those Calipari teams that was rock star status, undefeated. They went into the Indiana on the road, and they took the lead, and Indiana pushed it up. They threw it back to Watford. He hit the game winning three. I always loved his game, but I never made the connection, and then I somehow connected the dots. And yeah, I'm just a basketball nerd like that sometimes, but I'm loving his presence. Who does Paul George replace? That's a I didn't think about this. I'm a Paul George fan too, because Kelly Oubre is shooting the ball out like outrageously.
Oubre has been great this season. Yeah, it's like I don't want it to be either of them with the way in which Watford and Oubre are performing. Like Oubre, I don't want to ruin this rhythm he has in this starting unit, but I also know that it's probably at some point he's gonna cool off. And then with Trenton Watford, I mean, Joel Embiid kind of half jokingly said it reminded me of Ben Simmons, you know, with the triple doubles. It was good, you know, doing everything on the court. And I mean, I don't want to remove that equation either. He's versatile offensively. He can hit spot up threes. He can run him off a handoff, slingshot him towards the basket. Mm-hmm. Watford looks great with Maxey and Edgecombe. So I don't want to lose that. But at the same time, it's Paul George. You know, I mean, you do have to start Paul George. I don't think you can ask Paul George to come off the bench. So it probably has to be Watford.
With the case you made, I'm going to go Oubre. The way you just described Watford, you made a really good case for him. Well, all of the different things you could do. And yeah, I like the size in that front court as well. I don't really like Paul George at the four. I don't want Kelly Oubre at the four. I know Nick Nurse doesn't mind it at all. But yeah, maybe Oubre, because like you said, realistically, and I like Kelly Oubre, do we think he's going to shoot the ball and be this effective for the duration of the season? Probably not, which is fine. It's no shot at him. But then again, your point of starting Paul, I think about
could,
that
could
bench.
Could it be Edgecombe? Could it be the rookie? The rookie goes to the bench?
No, it can't be.
It can't be DJ Edgecombe? No, really? Why not? He's a rookie. So. That's the argument. Oh, we're going to put the rook off the bench. We don't want to have him hit the rookie wall. He's playing 37 minutes per game. We'll lower his minutes, lower the responsibility and demand on him. It's like an easy argument.
It is. The fan base has just rallied around him so strongly, and he's almost played himself into rookie of the year consideration that I don't know if you really want to do that without him hitting the rookie wall. Now, when he hits the rookie wall, then you got playing in day. It's easy to do, but I don't know if you do it before the rookie wall. But I'm also thinking about the bench unit. If you have a bench unit that is bringing on McCain, Grimes, Wofford, and Drummond, I kind of like that. These are good issues for Nick Nurse. These are really good issues. And also, is Paul George coming back and playing full time, or is he going to be minutes restriction like Paul? I mean, like Embiid. If he's minutes restriction, bring him off the bench. If he's minutes restriction,
maybe you start Paul George off the bench instead, and then it works, and he's like, yeah, I'll continue doing this as long as I'm getting my minutes.
$50 million off the bench.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a pretty good job. Pretty good job. And one quick note on VJ Edgecombe. Last four games, 4 of 12, 3 of 14, 5 of 15, 3 of 9. So his scoring numbers have dipped a little bit the last four games. And so that is just
something to monitor when it comes.
It could be the rookie wall. He's playing a ton of minutes, more games than he ever has over a short period of time. And so that is just something to monitor before George does come back. Last team I want to talk about here, the Orlando Magic, because weird stuff from their post game on Sunday after another loss for Orlando. They're now 4-6 on the year. They lost to the Celtics, who they should not be losing to considering the state of that team. So Banchero was asked about the new offensive system they're playing with, and if that's contributing to their turnovers. This season, they're 22nd in the NBA in turnovers. And Banchero's asked that question. He pauses and he hesitates. He kind of looks down at the score sheet and he says, I don't know. But he didn't really have an answer after like a 10-second pause. And then Jamal Mosley, their head coach, was asked a question about rookie Noah Penda. And you know, he played a couple minutes and he's like, you know, should Penda have played more? And Mosley simply, he responds to a question about Noah Penda. And he says, 17 turnovers for 29 points had nothing to do with the rotation. Thank you. I was like, huh? That's not the question. But so you have Orlando at this point where the blame game is beginning among Magic fans. They're 20th in offensive rating, 26th in three-point attempts per game, 21st in three-point percentage, 22nd in turnovers per game. How hot do you think the hot seat should be on Jamal Mosley? Because it feels very hot among Magic fans. But considering these offensive struggles, do you think this is just the blame game here, or is it rightful for them to be looking at Mosley as maybe the first guy to blame?
It's definitely the blame game, number one. But I won't say that it's unwarranted. I definitely think Jamal Mosley, this is the seat you sit in as a head coach. And sometimes when I watch this team, and I watched them a lot early on because I was so high on them that I'm still disappointed. But I remember seeing some of the things, and I even did like a video kind of breaking down just some of the things that I see on both sides of the floor, as much as you want to blame Jamal Mosley and as much as blame he should get, because at the end of the day, he is the head coach, I am also disappointed in the players as well. When I watch the Orlando Magic, I don't see a true defined leader in anywhere, shape, or form on the floor. They have so many miscommunication issues on the defensive side of the basketball. I don't know how they lost identity there, because that was something that was always giving me and most basketball people confidence in this team. As much as they need to figure out offensively, they'll always at least have the defensive side of the basketball figured out. That hasn't really been the case to the extent that I think that they should be playing at personally. And then offensively, again, it's no real defined leader. And it just feels like at every stretch of the game, one of the top three guys is put in situations where they feel like they have to do something to kind of stop a run or start a run or go make a play happen. And it just hasn't been as cohesive as I thought. Last night or the previous game, I think what Desmond Bane had 1 3-point attempt. There's been numerous games where he's shot 2 3-point attempts. And I don't think they went in and invested in that trade to get that type of production, you know. And we're not even talking about makes. We're just talking about getting the shots up. And they haven't even been able to figure that out. I think you do have to look at coaching with things like that. But I also want to say to Magic fans, is like, to a lot of teams, sometimes these issues appear and you think it's just, let's get the coach out of here. Some of these things it looks deep rooted. And I'm not necessarily saying they're wrong for maybe wanting a different coach or a different voice, but it's sometimes super hard to change the identities of players, especially overnight. So I don't know if you're going to just get a new coach in there and everything will be able to be figured out. Like, this is something from a roster construction, from a player perspective, that is going to take some deep changing of. And I hope they can figure it out soon, because you know the next step as a guy who is a Boston Celtics fan and have seen everything go through with the Celtics. What's next? It's Franz or Paolo, the same way it was Tatum or Brown. And that team, Tatum and Brown were winning. They were having success. They just didn't win a championship. But even the playoff runs didn't stop the conversation of one or the other. The very next thing, I mean, it's November 10th. Maybe by Christmas, that conversation, if they don't get things together, may become a real conversation. I know Magic fans are going to be very sensitive and problematic to hearing that, and they're going to get annoyed fast, but that is the reality. And that's the scary part about making big time investments, is the expectation rises so much that it's very fast now. People are, like you said, the hot seat. It goes from firing a coach to now we look at the GM and people are trying to save their jobs, and you don't have 2 or 3 years to figure things out anymore. So they got to figure something out fast. I am super, super disappointed in this team, and they kind of get me fiery, as you can see, because me, you, and a lot of people around the media, we were high on this team coming into the season, super high.
I mean, they were one of the teams I was most excited to watch. I thought the Desmond Bane acquisition made all the sense in the world, and then he has 1 3-pointer attempts on Sunday. The last time he had 1 3-point attempt was his rookie year. You know?
Wow.
Like, when he's playing under 20 minutes a game. And for that to happen is just baffling to me. I mean, is that on Bane because it's his struggles and he's not taking the shot? Is that on the system? Is it like, it's probably everything. It's probably all of the above. And that's where I think Magic fans are like, what the hell is going on? And that's why I think this next week for them, when you look at their schedule this coming week, they have a really tough game on Monday night against the Blazers and that awesome defense. And then they face your Knicks on Wednesday. They face the Nets on Friday. That better be a win. And then they get the Rockets in Houston on Sunday. So it's like, this schedule, they should have at least one win with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But is 2-2 enough to stop this blame game? Is 1-3 going to escalate things? Like, what if they lose all four? I mean, I like 3-1 maybe will quiet things down. But beating Portland, beating Brooklyn, beating one of the Knicks or the Rockets, you hope you can pull out one of those wins. But I don't know, man. I think you're right on here that it's going to go from, if they get let go of Mosley at some point, which I'm not totally sure they should. I like Mosley as a head coach. I think this too is in part on the players as well. I don't think it's just on Mosley. Like Banchero and Franz, they're really good young players, but they have their limitations still. They aren't what they will be in their peak yet. And Bane is just like, he's playing some of the worst basketball he had in his whole career. It's just weird. It's an odd start. So I would not fire Mosley yet. I think it's too soon for that. You need to give this team more time and see what they become, you know, come January, February, then maybe you make that move. But at this point, like, that blame game is gonna, it's eventually, inevitably gonna be, well, wait a minute, you know, we changed the coach, we added these players. Is it just a Franz or Paolo problem? And maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe there is something fundamentally wrong at the foundation between those two together. But ultimately with Orlando, it just sucks, as you said, because as like a pure basketball fan, I was so excited to watch this team. Elite defense, building on that, adding layers offensively, young guys getting better, Jalen Suggs, Anthony Black, all this youth they have. I love Jace Richardson, who they drafted out of Michigan State. You know, maybe he works in some minutes. I thought Tristan this would be one of the funnest teams. Oh, Tristan Da Silva, he's awesome. Like, so many good players. And I thought this would be one of the funnest watches in the NBA. Instead, they've been one of the most painful. And that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, as a Knicks fan who was hearing everybody come into the season say, it's going to be the Cavs or the Knicks, Cavs or the Knicks. It's just a free lane. In the back of my mind, I was like, I'm worried about this Orlando team. Mm-hmm. I looked at them like, at that level. So I agree with you. It's just unfortunate because it isn't like this thing that, from what I see, and apparently you see the same thing, where it's just like we change the coach and everything is solved. And that's where it becomes a little bit concerning, is I don't just think it's a coaching thing. And I know a lot of fan bases, they have that thinking where it's just like, we're not winning, let's blame the coach, fire the coach, and we'll figure this thing out. But if this is more deep rooted than firing a coach, this could be a spiral. So I'm in agreement with you. Where, like, I don't want to see Jamal Mosley fired this soon. I definitely understand the hot seat a bit. And you showing the next four games makes me kind of a little bit even more nervous, because I think best case scenario is 1-3, if I'm just being honest. I think that Blazers team could beat the hell out of you. Like, seriously, they get physical. Did the Blazers lose their last game? They may be due for a win. The Knicks in the Garden on
Saturday to Miami.
Portland wants to win. Knicks at the Garden. And then, you get a Brooklyn team. And like you said, you better beat the Nets. If you beat the Knicks or the Blazers, as good as that, like, if you lose to the Nets, everything just starts to rapidly fall apart. Everything.
Yeah.
And if we see that, you got to beat the Nets. I'm sorry, Brooklyn, but they can't afford for that to be the Michael Porter Jr. 40-point game. And somehow they went, like, they can't. They can't.
Oh, boy. And I think 2-2 would be a win. If they come out of this week 2-2, that'd be a dub for the Magic to enter next week. Because the schedule will ease up at some point. But Pierre, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This is a fun first podcast to do together with you, man. Please let people know where they can find all your stuff.
Find me anywhere in the world at Pee Wee the Plug. There should be no one else that pops up or is acting name come as from? Me. I should be the only one.
Where'd that name come
it
from?
It came from high school, where a couple of my friends randomly started calling me Pee Wee. And then on Twitter, I just needed a handle and I wanted something really catchy. And I just threw the plug at the end. And then Drake and Future came out with a song called like The Plug or something, and it blew up. And one of my friends was like, because you had it before the song, now that that became a thing, you must keep it. You can never get rid of this. And then the podcast happened. And once people know you as something, it's just what it is. Like, I'm 30. I don't know if I want a moniker. Sometimes I just like, should I just be Pierre Andreessen? But like, you know, same thing with Kenny, King of the Fourth Quarter. We're getting so much older. But once people know you as something, they won't ever let it die.
He's a father now.
Right. He's a King of the Fourth Quarter, but he's also a father. Like, you know, it's almost like Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne will be 50 or 65, but we'll still call him Lil Wayne. So, that's just where that came from. But, pleasure was mine. This was great. I love sitting down and talking basketball, especially with somebody like you. New ideas, new philosophies, and new things to learn. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, your opinions on this upcoming draft class, man, because we have a lot of intriguing guys. So I'll be tuned in throughout the year. But yeah, thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll do this again during the season. Up next, we have James Barlow talking about that NBA draft class. Thank you, Pierre. All right, it's time for draft class. Joining me today from NBA Big Board, James Barlow. James, what's up?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent today, man. It was the opening week of the college basketball season, so I want to go through some of the things we learned over this past week, starting with lottery lessons. So this is going to be a segment where we focus on three of the guys projected to go in the NBA draft lottery, top 10-ish guys. Who do you want to start with, James?
It's almost unfair not to start with Coa Pete. He had the best game for until Nyokos. We'll get to Abdallah soon. But, you know, Coa Pete had a monster performance against Florida, 37-5. A lot of people think Florida is the best front court in the nation, and he got what he wanted. I was impressed with his athleticism. You look at Coa Pete, he's built like, you know, a brick wall, and he can move, but, like, he showed explosiveness in a short roll. He had a couple lobs that he caught, finished above the rim plays. Those things that are things that I want to see from him. Very impressed with his playmaking. And like, I knew that he was going to be a really good defender. He showed that in the under-19s this past summer, but like, he did a very good job defensively, and mid-range jumpers, touch, like he did a lot for himself. I had him at number 11 in my preseason big board. And I think that he is somebody that could crack the top 10. We'll see how high he goes. I do want to see him shoot more threes. I do want to see him rebound and push, because he does have the ability to handle the ball. He handled the ball a lot for the Compton Magic. So, but very impressed with his game overall. I think he has the potential to be a top 10 pick for sure.
Yeah, definitely has potential to be top 10. He looked like a top 5 pick, at least in that opening night game against Florida. But to your point, I mean, if you're an NBA fan watching Coa Pete, like, okay, first of all, this guy's awesome. Like you said, he's like a brick house. He's strong, versatile offensively, lob guy. But then you're like, oh, wait a minute. He's only 6'8", hasn't hit a three-pointer yet this season. You mentioned his time with the Compton Magic last year. He shot 70.5% from the free throw line, only 29% from three. So if you're an NBA fan looking at Coa Pete, you're like, is this guy going to shoot threes at some point? Do you expect to see that this season, James? Or is that more of a long-term, down-the-line developmental thing for Coa?
I think it's long-term, but I also think, and I wish that these guys, you know, when they look at these schedules and say, okay, I don't know where this school is at, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to, you know, do what I want early on. That's, to me, the time where you should kind of try to mix things up. But ultimately, long-term, Coa Pete, I feel like he just has to stretch the floor. I think while he is a good athlete, he's not your great athlete. But at the same time, him being able to stretch the floor is going to keep the defense honest. And as a pick-and-roll four guy, I think, which he will be at the next level, you're going to have to make those jump shots on the pop. Like, he has very much so a 2002 power forward game right now, and he's just going to have to make some adjustments.
I mean, I think the good thing for him, at least in today's day and age in the NBA, there's so many two big lineups, so many two big teams. And so I think, like, if he entered the NBA, like you said, 2002, perfect, right? If he entered the NBA in 2016, it'd be like, is he a PJ Tucker, small ball five? Nowadays, it's like so many teams are playing with two bigs, whether they're, you know, 7 foot bigs or undersized bigs, that I think for Coa Pete, there's a role for you in the NBA nowadays when you see the amount of guards that, like, might be limited jump shooters, like Amen Ossar Thompson, that can set screens and play in the dunker spot. It's a positionless game nowadays. And I think that's where, with Pete, I can't wait to see him in the NBA, obviously, to see how, like, those edges of his game develop. But even right now for Arizona, the fact he did that on opening night, his first game of his entire college basketball career, is one of the best debuts we've ever seen. 30.7 boards, 5 assists against the defending national champions. It was just awesome to watch. Just like purely as a fan, like putting aside draft stuff and all that, it was just so fun to watch him do that.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I think that there is a level of point forward ability that we just haven't seen from him. And maybe it's the coaching staff telling him to kind of like dial it back some, but like, he has the ability to rebound and push. And like, that is what I want to see going forward, because then that will make up for the time frame that it takes for him to get comfortable shooting and knocking down threes. But if he just starts rebounding and pushing, or like in pick and roll, short roll, like he's going to be really good there. So it's like, I just want to see him use all of his skills right now. But I mean, that's, we're being very picky of a guy that had a 30-point opening night against what a lot of people think is the best team in the nation.
All right. What's your next lottery lesson from opening week?
AJ DeBanza is an amazing talent. He can get to the basket and dunk off of 2 feet in like 2 dribbles. Like, he covers so much ground. It's not, Giannis is a long strider, but Giannis is ultimately going to jump off of 1 foot. AJ can jump off of 2 feet. And I want to say that the thing that I've been the most impressed with about AJ DeBanza's game is that there's a level of unselfishness that you would think that he wouldn't have at this stage of his career, because he's an all-world talent. And, you know, you have to think that he feels like if he gets the ball in his hands, he can score, make a play. But he reads double teams very, very well. And also in that game against Villanova, he handled the ball at pick and roll late down the stretch a lot. And I think he's better in pick and roll right now than I thought he would be. I thought eventually he would get that probably at the NBA, but, you know, playing for Kevin Young and BYU, they're going to run an NBA system. That game against Villanova, like, it was probably like the last 7 minutes of the game. It was just AJ high pick and roll. You go make a play. And like, he put a defender in jail. He finished. I think he missed one jump shot, but he made all of the correct plays. So very, very talented. As much as I love AJ, I do have him number 2 right now behind Darren Peterson. And I just want to see going forward, I want to see him embrace taking open jump shots, open threes in particular. They played Holy Cross. I mean, no disrespect to Holy Cross, but like, you're up 30. I need you to knock. I want you to take those open jumpers, because if you're taking that open jumper and the defense has to close out to you behind the 3-point line, then you're really going to start dunking. I mean, he already dunked on people. He already creates dunks for himself in the half court. I just want to see him take more open threes. If he's somebody that, you know, we think is, well, we pretty much know is an all world level wing, those guys that he like emulates, copies, models his game after, whether it be Jason Tatum, Paul George, when his legs worked, Kevin Durant, like they shot open threes. So, I mean, I looked at it, Kevin Durant shot 6 threes a game his freshman year at Texas. And it's like, you just have to take and make open shots. And I have no issue with him shooting pull-up jumpers, mid-range jumpers. Again, you're superstar level talent wings, in my opinion. You should shoot and take them, but you shouldn't turn down open shots. So that's what I definitely want to see going forward from him, because he's an amazing talent. And I think a team that drafts 1, 2, maybe even 3, you're going to, you know, pour champagne in the draft room because you got yourself a dude.
I mean, yeah, I think you're spot on with everything you said. His playmaking is underrated, or was underrated entering the season. He's getting opportunities to show that he's actually really talented as a creator. He has feel, pace. He can pass the ball. He's not a selfish player at all. Very good. And I think that's where he's a bit underrated overall as a talent. He's not just this rangy scoring wing. He can create. He's really like a big guard in a lot of different ways with the way he handles the ball. But to your point, if you're going to be that superstar type of player, A, yes, hitting pull-ups is nice, but B, you got to just, you know, crush the defense and hit those open shots. And there have been a few times through BYU's game so far where he's passing on open opportunities and just dribbling into a pull-up mid-ranger. So far this season, according to Synergy, he is 1 for 4 on pull-up jumpers. He is 1 for 3 on three-point attempts. That's not enough. Three-pointers, period. Like, you just need to get those attempts up. And he's a better shooter than maybe he even realizes sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just early season, him working things out. I'm not so sure. What do you think it is?
Yeah. I had him. And the thing is, I had him at Utah Prep. I think he was at like 40% on unguarded catch and shoot shots. You know what I mean? You have to think, players of their caliber, they don't get very many open jumpers, just because, especially in high school basketball and in AAU, because they're the number one on the scouting report. But like, if you think back to those Golden State days and those big shots that Kevin Durant was hitting to knock out Cleveland, like those were trailing catch and shoot threes. And the play that I clipped up on Twitter was a trailing catch and shoot three that he ended up passing up. Now, again, he's super talented and it's Holy Cross. Again, no disrespect to the Lord's teams, but like, he's going to make those shots. So I want to see him, you know, I want to see him embrace those catch and shoot shots, because the floor becomes bigger when you're making and taking that top of the key catch and shoot jumper. So again, he's so talented. I've watched his clips like two or three times over, and it's just they're as impressive as the first time that I watch him.
What's holding him back from being your number one right now, James?
I think Darren Peterson just is a better basketball player, and it's crazy to say.
What does AJ need to do to be the better basketball player? Like, what's holding AJ back specifically?
Well, so I like AJ on the glass very much. So love him rebounding. I want him to create more defensive plays. He's got all that talent. He has all that length. He should be blocking at least 1.5 shots per game. He should be getting steals in transition. And right now, the defensive counting stats, not just, again, not talking about the two-game sample. I'm talking about just through, like, their high school, their prep career, their AAU career. I think he's behind as a defender, even with all that length, athleticism, and potential. I think Darren Peterson is going to just create plays on defense. I think Darren Peterson, those same shots, again, it's early. We're not talking about just two games, but those same shots that AJ may turn down, like, Darren's knocking those down. Like, you could, even though they did lose that game against North Carolina, like, there's a certain level of fear. It's like, oh, shoot, we left him open. He's going to make this shot. And then, like, that's going to continue to open up the game for him. Like, I feel like Darren, and not just these two games, but just speaking of these two games, Darren is averaging 21, and he hasn't, like, dominated the game yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just looks easy to him. But I think Darren is the best guard prospect that we've had in the past 15 to 20 years. And he's going to bring it defensively. He's going to make shots. Very good playmaker. Competitiveness. He just checks all the boxes that I want to see from my superstar guard right now. And again, I think that they're really close to each other. But today, I'm taking Darren Peterson.
I think that's incredibly fair. And Peterson had a great opening week himself, as you said. You mentioned that North Carolina-Kansas game. That was the game I was most looking forward to throughout the entire opening week. And Caleb Wilson and really everything he's done for North Carolina so far, even going back to the exhibition games. We knew entering college that he was an elite tone-setting defender. He had that play against Kansas where they caused a 10-second violation. He's going crazy on the court. You see the emotion. And, you know, we knew he's an elite finisher, explosive. But the mid-range shot making, he had that turnaround on the baseline against Kansas. The playmaking as well, they're using him at the elbows and the wing, those high-low passes to Vassar. I mean, he looks like a more complete player so far for North Carolina. And I loved, you know, after the game, he did his interviews and whatnot. And, you know, he showed, I think it was after their first game, or no, maybe it was after the Kansas game. He showed his wallpaper, and it was like, he puts his wallpaper or something to get pissed off about. And he's like, my time with the All-American game, I didn't touch the ball. Darren Peterson was on my team. And then he had an interview with Jeff Goodman with the Field of 68. And Jeff asked him simply, what haven't you shown? And Caleb Wilson's like, I haven't shown people I'm the number one pick yet. So that's all I'm worried about. And I just love the attitude. He walks the talk, essentially, right?
Yeah.
The intensity on the floor and off the floor. And he looks awesome, dude. I'm very, 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 very impressed with the complete package from Caleb Wilson so far. That's what stood out to me from opening week.
You know, going into the draft cycle, I had him at number 8, and I questioned how he would score. Again, everything that you said is true. Defense, plays hard, athleticism. I did not, it's two games, but I did not see him like scoring 20 a game. And he said, my goal is to average 20 and 10. And he is further along offensively than I thought he would be. Again, the defense is great. I think he ripped the point guard from Kansas at half court. Like, at, you know, the thing that you see from your four man, like, that's, it's crazy. And, you know, their first game, he looked like Shaq because he had like 7 dunks. And I couldn't even, it was so fake. I couldn't even like take good notes on it. I'm like, man, that's not real. But against Kansas, like you said, he's making turnaround jumpers. He's hitting face-up jumpers. I think that passing is going to translate. He's going to be able to play 4 and 5. I'm just struggling to find a comparison for him long term, just because I don't know. It's like, it's not Jalen Johnson because he doesn't have that kind of ball handling ability, but it's not John Collins because he's more fluid than John Collins, I guess you could say. John, or early Atlanta Hawks John Collins. I'm just trying to figure out what he projects to be long term, but him getting to the foul line, shooting 73% from the free throw line is a good indicator of his touch. And that's, to me, is like his swing skill. I try not to make too many like adjustments to my big boards early, but like I almost just had to move him up to four just because he's been that impressive. So, and maybe that Duke of North Carolina game could possibly start some conversations. I know he's a whole year older than Cameron Boozer, but it could start some conversations.
Interesting. For number three, yeah. Possibly.
I mean, since we're here, like I like Cameron Boozer a lot. I think his floor, he's probably the safest pick in this draft. His floor is extremely high. You can pencil him in for 11 rebounds, 3 assists.
Al Horford, right? Al Horford. Type of career. Wins, yeah. Every year, produces.
Just somebody that you just want on your team. But he has struggled again very early, but he has struggled to finish at the rim. And I just think that he has to adjust from the bully ball portion that he's been able to get away with throughout his high school career to probably just being a more skilled player inside of the perimeter. Again, the 3-point shooting, he didn't shoot the ball well the first game against Texas, but obviously, you know, things, shots fall against Western Illinois. But I have him down as just only 2 for 8 on layup attempts in the half court. And it's just something for me to monitor. Again, very high floor. And like as impressive as that game was against Tennessee, that exhibition game, like he shot 7 of 20, a lot of missed layups. So if you're missing layups, again, it's very early, but if you're missing layups against teams that don't have NBA talent in the front court, what's it going to look like in the NBA? Again, I think he is going to be your complimentary player, not complimentary player, but in a sense, like you pair him with a very dynamic point guard, then you really got something. He just may not be the guy that you give the ball to late in the clock or give the ball to down the stretch in the game and say, hey, go create a shot. But his floor is extremely high, and I definitely am tuned into that North Carolina. I mean, it's already North Carolina and Duke, but it's really going to be North Carolina and Duke because there's going to be so much at stake as far as, like, Caleb Wilson says, hey, man, I'm the number one pick, and here's very much an opportunity. Or AAU teammates, I mean, you got to think that he has a wallpaper for this game, so we'll see.
Yep, and North Carolina and Duke will face off on February 7th and March 7th. So we don't see that for a little bit, but they do have a number of really, really good opponents until then. They face Kansas on the 18th, albeit that in the Champions Classic. In New York City later this month. So I'm excited to see Boozer and that whole Duke team later this month. So you mentioned how, you know, guys could push for number three, but even though we're just a week in, there's always little bits of movement on our personal boards as we're adjusting and kind of readjusting to what we see. So I want to go through some weekly movers. And where do you want to start off, James, with somebody that you're either higher or lower on after the opening week?
Neokalis Abdalis. I had him number 9. I think I don't want to speak for everybody, but I feel like I was early on him being a lottery pick. I mean, it's only been 2 games, obviously, but I thought he was good enough to come out last year, to be honest with you. I thought he was really good at the combine last year. And that game against Providence that was scary. Like, that looked a lot like Luka. I hate comparing guys to all-time greats, but that looked a lot like Luka. He got what he wanted. And I'm not trying to pile on, guys, but I just thought he was the better prospect last year between Jaeger Demon and Kasparis Jakachonis. It just came down to visibility and opportunity. Abdalis had to play a stand in the corner role, you know, overseas, whereas those guys had the opportunity to handle the ball at the collegiate level. So I think, I mean, if Abdalis would have stayed in the draft last year, I'd have took him with one of those Nets picks in the late 20s. I just think he's that good. But now he looks like a very much so a lottery talent. 6'8", 6'9", huge broad shoulders. Somebody said he like is built like Zach LaVine, but he didn't have the springs in his legs. But it's going to come down to Abdalis just making shots. Like, it's literally that. That's it. Like, he can make every pass. He can create his own shot. He can get his own shot. He can get to the basket. He's extremely poised. It's just throughout his career, as those Luka Doncic comparisons, that they weren't just from, you know, this past week, and they've been going on for some time if you follow his career, but he just has to make shots. And he hasn't been efficient. And even then, like the game against Providence was great, but the previous game, I believe he was like 3 for 13. And he just kind of struggles to make shots. Again, not a great athlete, very talented, very skilled.
He's inconsistent, but if he can make James, shots, he's very inconsistent. That was my issue with him last year. And, you know, through two games, first game, he just wasn't good. Yeah. 3 for 13.
Right.
And second game, he's looking like a number one pick. I mean, I posted his highlights on X, and I asked simply, who does this remind you of? And, you know, sometimes you make a post and you don't expect a big reaction, but it was like a huge response.
Yeah.
With a ton of people responding to that. And so, like, some of the responses, a taller Luka, you know, there's a lot of Luka responses that we saw. As if we cycle through these with these we saw Virginia Tech is a 6'9" in shape Luka. like you know, I mean just a lot of Luka responses, but I feel like the Luka one's a little unfair to him. This one from YC Bang said more like MPJ, like MPJ pre-injuries in college. I thought was an interesting one as well. Yeah. Chris Middleton, I thought that's an interesting one. You know, Giannis could use a Chris Middleton on the Greek national team. That's a solid one, I'd say. You know, Tony Kukoc, if you want to go back to the 90s. Got to have
European comparison.
Got the white guy Euro comparisons. Got to have those. This one was my favorite. He looked like the Boom Goes the Dynamite guy. You remember that? Like before the internet went mainstream. You remember that from back in the day? That guy, this guy, the Boom Goes. He Boom Goes the Dynamite. You never saw that? That was a guy on like a local news channel that doesn't cover basketball, and he a basket was scored, and he said, "Boom Goes the Dynamite," and it's just like it was something on E-Bombs World many years ago. You know, Penny Hardaway. That's outrageous, Penny.
I got one for you though. What about?
Okay.
I like to make the cross racial comparisons because you know basketball is orange, and that's the only thing that I see most of the time on the court. But what if he is like, you remember Caris LeVert in Brooklyn? He said several stops, but Caris LeVert in Brooklyn, particularly in the bubble, he was like, okay, go play point guard and make some plays off the dribble. Like, maybe that's what, because Caris wasn't a great athlete, but like his footwork in the paint was what made him very successful because you couldn't stop him off the dribble. He was really good at pick and roll, really good pace. Definitely Michael Jordan. He looked like Michael Jordan. I mean, Providence probably thought he was Michael Jordan. So,
yeah. For people who are listening on audio, aren't seeing the video on YouTube, the Billy Ray tweets said, gonna have to go with Michael Jordan.
That's funny.
I know, that is funny. The comparisons, like you said, Providence probably thought he was Michael Jordan. I think the Caris LeVert one's interesting. There's a little streakiness to Caris LeVert, too.
Exactly. Caris can get 50. Mm-hmm. He could have 50, or you could be like, get this dude out the court because he's just 100%. Not making plays. So.
Yeah, but undoubtedly for Avdalis to have that coming out party, 6'9", out of Greece, goes to Virginia Tech. More games like that, I think more people will be on the same page as you with him as a lottery pick. Who's another guy that is a weekly mover for you?
So I'll be the first one to tell you, Cameron Carr, he was not on my radar at all. He had a lackluster freshman year at Tennessee. Second year, he left the program early. I know he was hurt. And then he winds up at Baylor. And he is, without a doubt to me, Baylor's best prospect. I know they have Tunde Yusufa, who was a McDonald's All-American, but like Cameron Carr is their best prospect. He reminds me a lot of Mikal Bridges. And I know that his measurements are floating around 6'6 or 6'5 with a 7'2 wingspan. That's great, but he's making shots from deep behind the three-point line. And he's comfortable enough to where if you chase him off the line, he can create his own shot. So he's shooting, I mean, it's two games, but 55% from three. Even if he's a 38% three-point shooter, if the Mikal Bridges prophecy rings true, Mikal Bridges was a 10th pick in that draft. And, you know, he's making a lot of money as a, you know, New York Knicks. He's been a sought-after guy. So I think Cameron Carr, to me, is easily the biggest riser, at least in my opinion, because I didn't have him in my top 25 first-round pick conversation. And like, again, it is two games, but like, he's been their best player, and I think he is going to be their best player long term.
I mean, he played 18 games the last 2 years, 4.3 minutes per game his freshman year, 10.3 minutes per game his sophomore. Now he's a redshirt sophomore because of the injury, as you said. So he's actually of junior age. But I mean, from going from barely playing at all to looking the way he did, because, you know, he's got size, 6'5", as you said. He's got length as well. He's hitting 54.5% of his three-pointers so far. We'll see where that number actually ends up going. But I've been really impressed with the defensive ability, the deflections, the reaction time. And that's where I think that Bridges comparison is coming from for you. It's not just the offense as like kind of a complimentary guy, but the defense. It's like, okay, this guy could fit in the NBA with his length and awareness and reaction time.
Yeah, and I guess he's the definition, if this all works out for him, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I mean, if you look at it, like, he played behind Dalton Connect his freshman year, then Tennessee reloaded with Chaz Lanier. So it's like he may end up having the, you know, the better draft results, and it just took a little time. So it's good. And he's got, you know, NBA, you know, DNA. His father played in the league for some time. So I'm very interested in seeing how this works out for him long term, especially in this season, because I think he has, you know, lottery level talent. If he's able to, again, we see the 3-point, it's going to come down, but just keep up with the deflections and being able to stretch the floor, get fouled and create your own shot. Like I said, I think it's a lot of Mikal Bridges in this game.
His father, for people who watch basketball in the 90s, is Chris Carr, who played 6 years in the NBA with Minnesota, Phoenix, Chicago, Boston, New Jersey Nets, Golden State Warriors. So played for a number of different teams in the 90s from 95 to 01. Chris Carr last year with the Celtics. I don't remember Chris Carr. I mean, I watched those Celtics teams. I don't remember Chris Carr.
He probably had some. I mean, he wears 43, but knowing you guys, Celtics fan, he probably wore like 83, some obscure random number that you guys just throw out because everybody's number is taken already. So.
Looks like he did wear 43. I'm seeing that with the basketball. Oh, wow. Sure, he wore 43.
Surprised that was available. But he's got some good DNA, and I know his father was a dunk machine, so he tried to put somebody in the poster last night against Washington. I know he missed it, but he's definitely got the tools for sure.
Yeah, he's a fun player. Like you said, looks like a first rounder. Games this week. So for people listening to Draft Class right now, they might be NBA fans who just keep an eye on college basketball. What's a game that you think people need to watch this week, James?
Kentucky and Louisville. Big game, big test for who I think is a top five pick. Maybe, I mean, some people think top 10 pick, but Mikal Bridges Jr., point guard for Louisville. He's got a lot of talent, 6'4", 6'5". He's going to measure out better than what he has in the past, starting to fill out physically. But dynamic point guard, definitely not gun shy. He's going to get his threes up, but he's a very good passer. He passes with both hands. I think his initial test, we'll call it a pretest because it was a preseason game against Kansas. It didn't go too well for him. He didn't shoot the ball well. But you got Kentucky. This is a cross-town matchup. Very, very good opportunity for him to prove why he can be a top five pick in this particular draft. I'm a big Mikal Bridges fan. I think he can make every pass. I do think that the shooting is good. He's dynamic with the ball. Again, the traits that you want your point guard to have in today's NBA. So it's going to come down to him being efficient inside the three-point line. He has struggled in the past, finishing at the rim, but he's starting to like get confident in himself, in his physical ability, and creating dunks off the dribble. And also for Kentucky, I want to see Malachi Moreno. He's kind of a sleeper right now, depending on who you ask. Jaden Quaintance is unavailable, but Malachi Moreno, some people think he has first round talent ability, and this would be a good opportunity for him as well. So, but really the guy that I'm focused on is Mikal Bridges Jr.
I can't wait to see Quaintance whenever he gets back. I'm looking.
Who does he remind you of? Well.
I mean, like the positive side of things or like this, the fearful side of things.
His negative side was scary, man. He was out there shooting threes like a splash brother at Arizona State. I feel like sometimes these college coaches are like, man, you know what? You're a five-star recruit. We got to keep these five-star recruits coming, man. Go ahead and shoot a couple threes. But he reminds me of Jalen Duren, to be honest with you.
Jalen Duren, that's
and Jalen Duren is, he's taking a leap this year. He's locked. I saw him cuss out Assur Thompson last night. And he would be the last guy you thought would be cussing anybody out for defensive, you know, reasons. But I think that Jaden Clayton just reminds me a lot of Jalen Duren. And they were both super young freshmen.
Is he going to continue Jalen to shoot, Duren? Though? No. Quaintance.
Oh, no.
Is Quaintance? Keep no. Chucking him up there?
I want no part of him. No. We gotta cut that out.
I know. Just stop. Nah, just end it.
Yeah, please.
Forget about it.
He wasn't a good free throw shooter. But he was like
45% or something like that last year. I know he's under 50.
And it's funny, like we're talking about him, but like he's really great on defense. And like he's an athlete. And I think he's a very good passer too. He just has to, you know, they gotta reel in the shooting, but he has a lot of talent. I just gotta see what it looks like post ACL for him. Post ACL.
Well, that's where like for some reason it's like not. It doesn't make any sense because this guy I'm thinking of was like 6'5 or 6'4, but it's like a stretched out Justice Winslow. Like Justice Winslow with 6 inches. You know, with the handle, the creation a little bit where there's not much of a shot. So it can work for Quaintance without a jumper. Whereas for Winslow, it never.
Yeah. You can't be 6'5. You can't shoot. But Quaintance is an amazing defender. So we'll see. I just need him to be healthy. But. You see, behind a three-point line, don't look at the rim. Please don't.
Pass the ball. Use your handle. Use your pass handle. The game I'm most looking forward to this week, I'll be at on Saturday at TD Garden in Boston, BYU and UConn. I'm very excited for this one. First time seeing AJ DiBonsa play in person and going against UConn and Dan Hurley and that group. They're not, you know, the team that they were that went back-to-back necessarily, but – be fun to see AJ in person against a good team
at home.
Yep. So I think hit for him for AJ DiBonsa out of Brockton, Massachusetts. A little bit of a homecoming, getting to play in Boston on the home of the Boston Celtics. So I'm looking forward to this one. What are you looking forward to watching in this game? Maybe aside from AJ, are there any other prospects in this one, like a Richie Saunders on BYU? Anybody else that you'll be keeping an eye on?
Richie Saunders, the tater tot guy, man. It's him like testing in the NBA is that like a pay cut for him? But Alex Caravan.
It probably is.
He's the father of the tater. He's the son of the father of the tater tot. So, but Alex Caravan has been on draft radars, it seems like forever. It also seems like he's been in school forever.
Eight years? 8 years now at this point for Caravan, it feels like.
He's been a while. Did he play with Ray Allen, it seems like? But definitely been there for a minute. But AJ, it's about AJ. I want to see him continue to be tested. And like I said, I really love, and I wish that Bill Self would do the same with Darren Peterson. But hey, man, 6 minutes left. We're scrapping the offense. Get a ball to your best player and let him make a play. And I just want to see the continued growth for AJ DiBonsa as a playmaker. And, you know, like I mentioned before, I want to see him take these open threes because if you're making open jumpers, like, what are we supposed to do with you? You're 6'9 and you can handle, and all you need is just half a step because you can finish. You're going to get to the rim. It's like he's just missing that one piece of his game. And then that's when it gets really, really scary. That's when those Kevin Durant, Tracy McGrady comparisons are like really, really true about him because he's just that talented of a kid. So I think he's going to have an amazing performance. This is at home, one of his many homes. He's a well-traveled kid, but I think he's going to put up an all-timer for sure. And I mean, he's a competitive guy. You have to think that he sees Coa Pete get 30. You have to think that he sees Abdallah break the internet. And he's like, okay. It's not a conversation, but we'll make it a conversation in my head and, you know, show that he is, you know, potentially number one pick in this draft.
I mean, I do think AJ is wired that way. And this is the type of stage for him to start to prove that. With Richie Saunders, the tater talk guy, I think he's an NBA guy. I don't care. He's going to be 25 as a rookie. The jumper, the activity, the intensity, he at least deserves a chance. Is he going to make
sure
it?
He'll get a chance. We'll see.
He deserves a chance. I mean, the shooting ability, like last year out of nowhere, 43% from three, and he's doing stuff off the dribble and pull-ups. And I mean, we'll see if that sustains over the course of the season. But I'm a Richie Saunders guy. I love the headband, James.
I'm not mad at him for the headband. I wonder, you know, if he sees that two-way deal and is like, what? That's it? Man, please. But I mean, you know, you love basketball. You do it for free.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to take a pay cut if he takes a two way. So.
Yeah, so I saw he is like a Tater Tot ice cream brand, something like that through the NIL. Like a
really
Tater Tot ice cream. I don't think Tater Tot flavored ice cream. There's no way that's good.
Nah, I'm a public school kid, man. Tater Tots weren't good just to begin with to me, but ice cream, that sounds like trip to the bathroom.
Tater Tots, very rarely have I enjoyed Tater Tots. When Tater Tots are good, they're great. But yeah. Tater Tots, like you said, public school, like I would always pass.
Nah. Just, who knows how old those Tater Tots were? They were feeding us.
How many years they took off our life. The Saunders family to blame.
Right. I got a bone to pick with him then, for sure.
Well, if you get a chance to sit down with him on your show this year, NBA Big Board, well, you know, you can ask him
about it. Oh, yeah, we definitely bring up the Tater Tot stories. Yeah. Have to. Because I need to know.
He's going to get so sick of talking about it once he goes to the draft cycle and every single person is asking about the Tater Tots. He's going to be tired of it. Well, James, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Please let people know where they can find all your stuff.
I am on X or Twitter, whatever you call it. I'm at Draft Junkie James. On YouTube, I am an independent content creator. It's the Draft Junkies podcast. If you find me on X, just you'll figure it out from there. But right,
your brother left you. He left you.
Man, he left me, but he left me in a good spot, man. And I'm very happy for that dude working for the Mavericks. And you know, I know he misses it, but he is reaping the results of all of his hard work. So I got to carry on the torch for the family. Got to make mom and dad proud. So. Definitely find me on X. Everything is there. So, yep.
Hey, keep up the great work, James. Always enjoy your stuff. Have a good day.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me again.
Big thank you to Pierre and James for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Emmy, Sarah, and Dakota for producing today's episode. We'll be back again on Thursday. We got Tom Haverstroh and a special guest as well. Looking forward to that one. Have a good week, everybody. Hope you enjoyed your time listening to today's podcast.